You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome to a special Tuesday episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Now, I know a lot of you are wondering why we are doing this on Tuesday and not our usual Wednesday. It's because I'm still in Las Vegas for Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series tonight, the season premiere. So I'm driving back to Phoenix tomorrow. So we decided to bump it up a day because we didn't want to skip a week. We didn't want to skip the honored guest this week. We've been playing this for a while. I was hoping to have him on last week after UFC Fight Island, but we decided after a month in Abu Dhabi, he needed a break. It's also a 7-year work anniversary, so it all worked out in the end. So welcome to the A-Side Live Chat, the Brazilian beast himself, Guilherme Cruz. Guilherme, it's been a long time, but welcome.
Yes, finally, what a special day for me. It's a special day for me, not because my 7-year anniversary with me, Fadi, but because I'm finally on the A side.
That is the correct answer, and that is the attitude I want to hear. We've been asked a lot when Guilherme was going to be on the show, especially after his time in Fight Island, all the excellent videos he did. You can go watch his stuff with David C. Figueiredo. He had a really rough life, zipping around a racetrack in like Ferraris with a UFC octagon girl. Just the worst life imaginable. But I'm sure we'll talk about all of his experiences in Fight Island. I know it's been a week since, but last week he got his much-deserved break. We'll get into that more later. Of course, I am in Las Vegas, still quarantining in my hotel before the fights tonight. But Casey, how's life with you in Englewood?
Oh, just up to good. Up to lots of good.
Englewood up to good.
People are still launching loud-ass fireworks at 11 at night, but, you know, Englewood... Do people do that in Brazil, Guilherme? Just blow off like giant dynamite-sized fireworks at random parts of the night?
Yeah. Okay. When there are soccer games going on, they always do that.
The only fireworks we get are the Diamondbacks, the professional baseball team, which is about 2 blocks from me, shoot fireworks every Sunday night when they have a game. So that is a pleasant surprise when I'm trying to sleep before Monday, and then I get woken up by loud fireworks. But regardless, you guys know the drill. This is not our podcast. This is your all's podcast. You can ask any questions on Twitter, the site. Casey's man in the YouTube comments, I'm sure he'll have a few pop up. You can ask us. I'm sure most of you can ask about MMA. You can ask about anything you want. If you have any specific Brazilian questions you've always wanted to know, and I have a question for Gui at the end of the stream. Casey and I, AK and Mike Heck, all talked about this, but he was on vacation, I believe. So we'll ask him at the end because I want to get a Brazilian's perspective. But without further ado, Casey, what's our first question?
Let's go straight to the YouTube comments.
From Ollie in the YouTube comments, where does Edmund Shabazian go from here? He wasn't outclassed in the first round, arguably won it, just gassed hard. Do you think he should swap camps, and which camp should he go? I think Trevor Whitman. So I'll set the scene. Edmund Shabazian came up short against Derek Brunson this past week, and I was at it. You can go watch all of our post-fight coverage on this YouTube channel after this podcast, of course, or if you're listening, after you listen to it, go find the videos. He came up short, lost second round TKO to Derek Brunson. It was his first ever loss.
Did you say second round TKO?
Was it second round?
No, it probably should have been a second round TKO.
Yeah.
I understand.
It should have been a second round TKO. In my mind, it was a second round TKO. I agreed with the stoppage when Herb Dean did stop it, but I think it could have been stopped a little sooner at the end of the round when he was out. Derek Brunson dribbled his head off the canvas right when the bell rang. But that's another conversation altogether. But Edmund Shabazian, first loss. He's only 22, guys, and this commenter is already saying switch camps, saying what's next. So, Guilherme, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Edmund Shabazian's loss, and where does he go from here?
Yeah, he lost. He lost a good fighter. And that's not the end of the world. He's young. He's just starting his career. He's a good fighter. He's a promising one, but just chill down, relax a little bit, because he's just starting his career. No way. There's no reason to start trying to fight who's guilty. Where he should go, if he wants to switch camps, okay, fine. But that it's not our role to because this guy lost once to say he should move to another team.
It's the boxing mentality, I think, where people put so much stake into wins and losses. It's not quite the same in MMA, especially when you're 22 years old and you lose to someone like Derek Brunson, who has only lost to the best of the best and has fought pretty much everyone in middleweight. But Casey, you spent a lot of time with Edmund when you did that. What did you call it? The portrait?
Yeah, portrait series. Yeah.
Just the portrait series. Yeah. So he talked about his goals of being the youngest champion in UFC history at the countdown clock. It seems like every single interview he talks about it. That's probably not going to happen now. Well, it still could happen, of course, if he riles off a few wins or gets a short notice fight. But where does Edmund go from here after his loss to Derek Brunson?
Oh, he just, spends the next couple of weeks healing up. No, licking his wounds and everything. He just gets back in there. The idea of him changing camps is, I think, kind of ridiculous right now. I mean, right. Seriously, eight fighters lost in that fight, on that card, but yet we don't get, eight questions. Hey, should this fighter change? Everyone that loses needs to change a camp. No, that's ridiculous. Now, his next fight, though, I'm assuming he's going to take a big jump back in competition where he'll probably be the much higher ranked fighter. Let's see how he comes back from that. I think that's going to be the big question, how he comes back from that. Right now, there's just no. I mean, no, he's 22 and he was fighting and, well, it wasn't supposed to be a main event, but it was a main event. It was a main event of a fight night card, and he got a top 10 opponent and he lost. And that's, like, I think we said it right. Like, that's okay. We lose. You know, LeBron James airballs every once in a while. That's okay.
Quiet your tongue.
Yeah. I think it's really more in it. People are just more kind of attacking the coaching of it just because of his, the previous history of it, but
that's what I was going to ask Guillermo. Would we be having this conversation about switching camps if it was anyone other than Edmund Tarverdian in Edmund Shabazzian's corner?
Yeah, 100%. If he was training at ATT, AKA Kings MMA, any other team, no one would be asking if he should train switch gyms. That's the only reason why. Okay, he's a hot prospect. There was a lot of hype around him, but is the fact that who is his coach. And MMA fans don't like him since the Ronda Rousey days. So they're going to attack that.
Let's also not forget that all the footage that even Casey had, like when he put it in that portrait shot, he was like getting tossed around by Ronda when he was like 14, 13. So this is a coach he's had pretty much his entire life. He's not going to leave his coach after one loss. After spending almost his entire adult life with this thing, he's not even a full, like, he's just becoming an adult now. And we're seeing him, the growing pains, in the octagon right now. But even in this question,
I mean, he had a great first round. I mean,
he did.
He had a great first round. He arguably won that first round. I'm not, if he scored it for him, yeah, that's perfectly justifiable. So, I mean, he didn't come. And the idea that he gassed or, something like that, I really don't think he gassed. I think it's the fact that he went up against the best opponent he's ever gone in there against, and he's faced the most adversity he's ever gone up against. And you know what? That makes you tired. Like, I can run a mile pretty fast, but punch me in the face five times really hard and then make me run a mile. You go, dude, where's your cardio, Casey? He's like, well, I got my face bashed in. So
I can't really breathe through my nose right now, guy, and I have a concussion. Well, even Derek Brunson himself said it. Like in the NBA and the NFL, his words were, if you're good enough, you play. And he said that Edmund Shabazzian earns this fight, and he deserved it. Now he's here. And like you said, it's all about where they go from here. But really quick, if you're Edmund's coach, who do you want him to fight next, Guillermo?
That's a good question. I don't have any. I don't think he should get any. Anyone near the top 10 or top 15, just build him back. Give him a winnable fight.
Casey,
someone outside the top, the unofficial 25. One of those names. I'll probably have a hard time thinking of. But if you mention them, I'm like, oh yeah, him. Who did Marvin Vettori?
I think you should fight Marvin Vettori or Ian Heinisch.
I would like him to go even farther back in the line, honestly.
No. I don't know, man, because he's sparked Brad Tavares. So I think he's past the point of fighting outside the top 25. I think he's easily a top 15 middleweight. I think Vettori and Heinisch are very winnable fights, and they're in the top 15. And I think a win over one of those. Ian Heinisch coming off a knockout win. Marvin Vettori is coming off his finish win. Vittori's been itching for a fight. I like those two fights, but let's let our commenters decide.
Yeah. I would send them even farther back. Whoever,
Brandon Allen.
Around that area. Yeah.
Sure.
Around that area.
What about the loser of Weidman and Omari? Weidman, if he loses, it would be like 1-6 in his last 7 fights.
Wow.
No, if Weidman loses, definitely not Weidman. That's just cruel. If Weidman loses. How do you say his opponent's name? I know Omari. How do you say his
Omari
last name?
Omari Akhmadov, I think.
Akhmadov, right?
Maybe if Akhmadov loses, but I mean, I don't have to pull up the UFC roster right now, but I'm sure I can name, once I see the list, probably 10 middleweights that we haven't seen in a while that could get in there with Edmund.
Well, what's the difference between Darren Till, who's now 1-1 in middleweight, and Edmund Shahbazyan? How come we can't, how come we're trying to send Edmund back to the outside the top 25, but now we're talking about Darren Till possibly fighting like Jack Hermanson next?
Because Darren Till,
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, I understand. That's a good question, but because all losses aren't created equal. Robert Whittaker didn't send Darren Till to the hospital. Darren Till, that fight was up for grabs to the last minute of that fight. And arguably, Darren Till, a lot of people thought Darren Till even won that fight. And I don't agree with it, but I understand their point of view. But I think their losses aren't equal losses.
But do you think that's style wise? Because Till's not going to go out there and just run at you. Like Derek Brunson is a bulldozer.
Yeah, he is.
And if Edmund Shahbazyan fights Darren Till for 5 rounds, I don't know if either one gets finished. I think that fight could be very similar to the Whittaker fight, where it's a lot of fainting and like psyching each other out. I think you fight Derek Brunson, you got to be ready for a bull running at you.
I agree. And I think Till Shahbazyan, we have plenty of time for that one, I think.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm not trying to book that fight. I'm just trying to see what the difference. This one's Mike Heck MMA from the site says Edmund versus Eric Anders. I like that fight. Or Christoph Jocko, I think, would be a fun fight too. There's a million good fights. I wish David Branch didn't get cut. I thought that would have been a fun fight. But yeah, I like the Eric Anders fight. If Eric Anders wants to fight a middleweight, or if he wants to go up to light heavyweight,
yeah, the Eric Anders area of the rankings, I think that's a good one. All right. Here we go. I like this one.
From Lucas Baca, can Brunson, now with a new camp, make a realistic run at the title? So, Guillerme, we've been talking a lot about Edmund losing, but there was a winner after all. Derek Brunson got the W. So, can he make a realistic run at the title with this new camp?
Yeah, 100%. There was a great performance. He had a few great performances over the past few years. The best few years, actually. And he's looking solid. Of course, he needs a couple more big wins, but I think he's ready to make that jump, you know, to get a top 10 and then a top 5 to finally get. And middleweight division is a bit weird. if you get like 2 great wins, you're up there. But there are not a lot of names right now. But yeah, if he gets the right matchups, he can definitely get it. I'm not sure if I see him beating a top 5 right now. But yeah, he can definitely get there.
I think the Derek Brunson we saw on Saturday that was not running out there with his chin wide up in the air is a dangerous, dangerous fighter. Because he hits hard and he has great wrestling. Like, he has phenomenal wrestling that he rarely uses. And when he got on top of Edmund Shahbazyan, that was a wrap. He was using his head as a basketball. I think he could beat guys like Till. I think he could have beaten Robert Whittaker if his chin wasn't just out in the air acting a fool down in Australia. So I don't know who he should fight next, but Casey, do you think he can make a run at the title?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned this on our post show. I hope Derek doesn't hear this, but like, I can't see Derek actually winning a title. I actually see him losing probably badly to Izzy again, if Izzy still has the title. But remember, like, in his fights against Romero, if you go back and rewatch that fight against Romero,
it's like 3 minutes away from winning.
Yeah, he was doing great. Then he got hit in the balls with a nut shot, and then everything kind of changed, and then obviously it went downhill real fast. And then Robert
That blast double leg takedown he got on Romero was a thing of beauty. When Romero was like, "Oh, I'm going down," he didn't know what was going on.
You know, Derek Brunson, he has that kind of case of Corey Anderson, in the sense that you knew Corey Anderson was good, but the problem when Corey Anderson loses, he loses big, and you just remember those losses. And that's the problem with Derek Brunson. his losses were high profile losses and he lost big. And unfortunately, his other high profile fight that he got a bad decision with Anderson Silva. So
And then he got sparked by Jacare, and I think it was North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think it was the main event. And he just, when he walked to the octagon, I knew like I don't even think he wants to be there. That's when he just walked across the octagon and got punched in the head real hard.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. So when Derek Brunson loses, he loses bad. Yeah. And he looks bad too. It's not like it's a firefight. Like, oh, someone had to lose. I guess that'd be that guy. But like, dang. Yeah. Like, he loses bad. So hopefully this gets him, people start rethinking who Derek Brunson is, and because he's an excellent fighter, and I want to see him in A level fights, you know. But ask him.
Well, Guillermo was saying middleweight's a little weird, and I agree, but it also happens to be one of the few divisions that's moving. Like, we have a title fight, we got Whitaker Cannonier, which I think is an excellent number one contenders matchup. Darren Till's blew his knee out, so he's going to be out for a while. But this division is actually moving along, which seems odd in the year 2020. So, Guillermo, if you could book him, who's he fighting, and why is it Jack Hermansson?
Yeah, that's the only fight I see for him right now. If Darren Till can't fight anytime soon, I think that's a fight to make.
100%. Casey, are you in agreement?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah,
I agree. JT MMA says the Golden Boy versus your boy, which is Edmund Shabazzian versus Eric Anders. NCAA national football champion Eric Anders.
I can't find the comment, but basically someone asked, did Derek Brunson get robbed of a knockout of the night bonus? And he absolutely did. So
I think if it ended in that second round, he would have got it.
Oh, I guess, man. Yeah, I just think the UFC.
Who even won? Who are the bonus winners?
Jennifer Maya. Maya deservingly. Fight of the Night went to Lando Green. And then the other performance award went to... Who did it go to?
I don't even remember.
Oh, man. Oh.
Exactly.
The point being, it shouldn't have gone to Brunson. He was such a
hit.
Oh, Luke Gates? Oh, man. I think Luke Gates was way more violent, though.
But it's not about just violence.
Right. I get it. But the way that Luke Gates had him in the clinch and then lifted his off the canvas so it's legal, and then the sound of his knee on a skull was the most memorable moment of that entire fight card for me. Just the sound of it. So I think like the week before, didn't they in Fight Island? Didn't they give like six bonuses on one card?
Yeah. Basically, if you made weight and got a finish, you got a bonus.
I think Luque and Brunson deserve it. I think that's 1A, 1B. I don't want to take Luque's away to give to Brunson.
I give it to Brunson seriously because Brunson was a heavy, heavy underdog.
Sure, not,
betting wise and just straight up just pick 'em fights as far as these people pick not going against the bets. So I definitely think Brunson got screwed over, but. He made someone angry backstage.
Vicente Luque got the bonus for acting as a translator in the back, probably.
Ah, good for him, then. He deserves it.
Gilbert Burns was Jennifer Maya's translator the post-fight interviews. from Kiwi_MMANZ, Mark is his name on Twitter. Can we have Luque versus RDA main event somewhere? If not, who do we give Luque? Neil on Neil, # the A-side. So, Guillermo... I'm sure you watched, but Vicente Luque picks up another very violent win. So that's two in a row. He beat Nico Price, and now he beat Randy Brown. His only recent loss has been to Stephen Thompson. And before that, I think he lost to, Michael Graves on, the Ultimate Fighter finale when it was, Black Zillions ATT. So that was a long time ago, completely different fighter. So if you are booking your fellow Brazilian, do you want to see a Brazilian versus a Brazilian, or do you want to give Vicente Luque someone else?
I still want to see RDA against Santiago Ponzinibbio. I think that's a lot of heat there. I think they should fight each other. So I don't think if Ponzinibbio can't take the fight, he tells me he want to fight as soon as possible. So that would be an option. But if not, okay, that's a great one. I don't mind seeing Brazilians against Brazilians. A lot of people in Brazil don't like watching that. Just like the Rodolfo Vieira Marcos Perez fight that just got booked, people would hate that. But I don't mind. It's New UFC. They're gonna fight eventually, so they just let them fight. That's a fantastic matchup.
That is an awesome matchup. But I'm going to get back to that in a second. But Casey, who do you want to see Vicente Luque fight next?
Where's Luke? Is he top 15? Is he top 10?
Yes.
He's top 10.
He called out Nate Diaz, who sits right below him. He's not going to get Nate Diaz. Right. Randy Brown was unranked. Vicente Luque was previously booked against him before it was scrapped. So he said, I don't care about rankings. We signed a contract before. I'm just going to get ready to run it back. So all respect to him. I like this matchup, Neil on Neil. And I really want to, I think Jeff Neal wins that. And I really want to see Jeff Neal versus Vicente Luque really badly.
Yeah, as far as Luque, since the way I see it, as far as matchmaking, if Luque did the UFC a favor and fought someone behind him, which was Randy Brown, I think he returned the favor and now he gets to fight someone ahead of him. So whoever's ahead of him, Luque's earned that. And honestly, Luque's the type of fighter you can put anyone in there. I don't care. I just want to see a Vicente Luque fight. So I'm happy.
Sorry. Yeah, this is a good one too. I think Casey just had surgery, so yeah, I think he's out for a little bit.
No.
Vicente Luque in the post fight interview said that he just wants to fight. He like rankings regardless. He wants to fight guys that will bring the fight. He wants violence. Like he wants violence. Like obviously he wants to fight for the title. But he wants these violent fights. I think Jeff Neal beats Neil Magny. I think Jeff Neal is a bad, bad dude. I think that guy has dynamite in his hands. And I think Neil Luque is an unbelievable fight night main event. And that someone's going to bed in that fight. Someone's getting a bonus in that fight.
You know why I like that Neil on Neil violence? Because we all know Jeff Neal is a very dangerous fighter, but
right.
To beat Magny, usually you're gonna have to go into deep waters, and that's where I want to see Jeff Neal, because I think that's where we really see how great a fighter can be. Like we've seen Edmund Shabazian look awesome, but when he went to deep waters, obviously there was some issues came up. Like that's
like,
why
like Ponzinibbio's win over Magny.
Yeah,
that was a huge win because he cleaned his clock in the first round and then still fought like what a handful of rounds. So I love that fight. Yeah, you're not wrong.
So I
have a question unrelated to this that Guillermo said that Brazilians don't like Brazilians fighting Brazilians. What if it's in Brazil? Is that weird? Like if a Brazilian fights a Brazilian in Brazil?
Yeah, they don't like us. They feel like it's almost like the UFC is trying to slow someone down, you know,
right?
To bring someone down and you know for someone to win. So That's why the UFC rarely comes to Brazil and books Brazilians against Brazilians, because Dana White once heard that Brazilians like to see Brazilians wins, so they always book Brazilians against people from the US and Europe. So that's why you rarely see Brazilian against Brazil.
So did Aldo fight Moicano in Brazil?
Yeah, Fortaleza, and also had Marlon Moraes and Rafael Sansão in the main event.
Oh yeah,
so it was Yeah, I mean, but Jose Aldo is a former champion. He's a star here in Brazil. So, and Moicano is not a big name yet here. So it was weird when they booked Jacare against Vitor Belfort.
That was
gonna be my next. That was weird, yeah, because Jacare was getting to the top of the UFC, and Vitor Belfort is such a legend. So that one was a bit weird for the fans, and it was weird to see fans rooting for Jacare against Vitor Belfort. That was weird. I didn't expect. Like,
what about Jose Aldo and Marlon back in December?
That was in the States, right?
That was in the States.
That was still in the States. Yeah. It still seemed like... I asked Jose, I'm like, is it? He's like, I don't care. I'll fight whoever. Like, he's going to say that. But I know Anderson said he didn't like fight Brazilians, right?
Yeah. Anderson's a bit weird.
Yeah.
Well,
can I ask you a quick question, Jeremy? Does it matter where the Brazilian fighter trains? Say like Marlon, who does all his training in the U.S. now, or even Anderson, or say Amanda Nunes, she does all her training in the U.S. Does it change anything as far as like, you know, like you say Aldo, who does all his training in Brazil, he stayed home. I don't know.
Even Connor said that. He's like, he never learned English, and I respect that. That was a very weird thing to say. But like, he's like, I respect that he didn't learn the enemy's language.
Okay.
Yeah, it matters if the fight is in Brazil. Like if Jose Aldo is fighting someone in Rio, he's gonna have the crowd in his favor because he lives in Rio. He's all over the place here. So But I don't know. It depends on how the fighter acts on social media and all that about Brazil. Let's say Amanda Nunes. She still isn't a big deal in Brazil. She's a double champion, but she doesn't seem to care that much to build that relationship with Brazil. She lives in the U.S. for a long time now. All power to her. She has done a tremendous job for her in her on her career and everything, but she doesn't seem to care about becoming a big deal in Brazil. And I respect that. If she doesn't mind, okay, sure. But when she comes to Brazil, she's not getting the Jose Aldo treatment from the fans when she fights in Rio, you know?
So when you're watching her social media and you see her supporting the U.S. national soccer team, is that
yeah. A big deal? not for me, but for the fans, yeah, sure. 100%, yeah. When she went, I think she went to a media day with a U.S. Yep. jersey. Yeah.
Oh, it's different. Okay.
All right. Yeah. So I was gonna say this for the end, but now that we're talking about Brazilian fighters, Casey, we've talked about this on a I think it was after, I can't remember. Oh, it was after the Little Knock Shogun fight. So I'll ask Guilherme. In America, we say who is the Mount Rushmore of so and so, which means we have to pick the four best of something that represent your thing. Who is your Mount Rushmore of Brazilian MMA fighters? So they could you could base that off skill, greatness, yeah. legacy, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the top
That's
two
a
are
tough
locks.
One.
I think Royce Gracie and Anderson Silva are locks. And then after that, I don't know.
Yeah. I would say Big Nog and Vanderlei Silva.
Vanderlei? See, that's the one that when I bring up Vanderlei or Shogun, people have to sit there and think. Because people want to add Jose Aldo. They want to add Big Nog.
It's like so tough, man. Jose Aldo, how can you leave him out? Him out of the Mount Rushmore. It's a
what about Chris Cyborg?
Why can't the Brazilian want to have five or six faces? Come on, man.
Yeah, we can have a lot of faces.
Yeah.
We have a lot of mountains here. Yeah, well, big.
That's true. What about someone like Cyborg?
Yeah.
So, would you?
That's a tough one.
Cyborg, Nunes, Jose, Vanderlei. It's real tough.
We need a lot of Mount Rushmore here.
Yeah, four. If there was like a fan expo, who would have more lines get? Who would have more fans to get her autographed? Amanda Nunes or Chris Cyborg?
In Brazil.
I think it's Cyborg.
Cyborg. Yeah, I felt that. Yeah, I felt that way when I was down there. I felt Cyborg just had a much bigger connection to the Brazilian fans. So.
But you were at the UFC Curitiba, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's her hometown.
Okay. Well, yeah. That'd be huge for her. There was that mural. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, remember when we used to travel to shows and we could see each other, and every once in a while we would shake each other's hands and maybe even hug each other.
Yeah. Before this pandemic, we were talking about like who wants to go. Was Jose Aldo Cejudo was supposed to be in Sao Paulo, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I'll go. Like, I want to go to that fight. I want to go to Brazil. It's going to be me and Guilherme down there, maybe. But then the pandemic happened. Do you think Davidson Figueiredo could be the next big thing in Brazil?
Yeah, I think so. He's a smart guy. You know, he fights phenomenal. He's entertaining. And he knows how to play the game, you know, how to promote himself. If he continues to do a good job on that on that side as well, I think he can become a big deal. He has an incredible life story.
He does. Yeah. I was going to bring that up. Yeah. Your interview with him was phenomenal. When he was talking about like being a chef, being a mason, being a security guard, like that's I want to see him bring
he was a hairdresser.
Yeah.
I want to see him go bring his belts and do all of those things.
Yeah.
So he's an interesting cat.
Yeah. And I think he has the potential to be that. I mean, he's 19-1. It's incredible. So
I think the only knock on him is everyone loves Joseph Benavidez. Yeah. So no matter who beats him, you're gonna be the bad guy. Like if he had gone out there,
the fight. I mean, the performance he had was
unbelievable. It was a perfect. It was one. It was like a perfect game.
Yeah.
He just happened to do it against one of the most beloved fighters.
If you do that to anyone else, they would be calling you to be in the top five for pound for pound or something like that. By the way, if you do that to Benavidez, it's like, oh, man.
You can't look like an asshole.
You need to do that.
I know. And also, like, because he knocked out Benavidez down three times. So it's like he knocks him down and then he gets up and it looks like he was bullying him. Like, yeah. If he goes out there and, like, say this rumored Cody Garbrandt fight happens and he does that to Cody Garbrandt, he's going to be a huge deal. Because I think Cody is, like, he has a million Instagram followers. And he's, like, 1-3 in his last four fights with three knockouts. And he's still one of the most popular fighters in the world. So if he does that to Cody, watch out. But anyway, we've been talking a lot about this case. Do we have any more questions? I think we've only answered two or three.
Yeah. I want to see the UFC do a video of him with an interview of Megan O'Leary but while he's like doing her hair. I would suggest you, Gary, but it's gonna be a short interview, but just like, all right, you're good.
I'll go down. I got the best hair on MMA fighting.
This is true.
You can do my hair.
All right.
I take that back. Best hair in MMA media.
Oh, hold on. Let me get rid of this last one. This is a good question.
Question for the panel. Did the UFC handle the Eric Spicely situation correctly? So, for those of you who aren't aware, Eric Spicely was released this past weekend. He did not weigh in. Weight cut, weight management issues heading into the fight. So, he didn't even hit the scale. His scheduled fight against, who was he supposed to fight? I can't even remember.
Marcus Perez,
that's right. So, that fight fell through. Eric Spicely was later released, but before he was released, he put it out on social media that full disclosure, this was his first fight he took while on antidepressants, which he said he was suffering from concussions and sunlight hurt his eyes and this and that following his Deron Wynn fight, which was his first fight back in the UFC. I think that was on the Raleigh card, the North Carolina card, if I can't remember correctly, a little more than a year ago. So he was later released. A lot of people took issue with that. Eric Spicely kind of took issue with that. You can go read our interview we did. Stephen Morocco on our site did it, where he spoke to Spicely at length about this topic. But, Guillermo, to answer the question, did the UFC handle the Eric Spicely situation correctly?
They handled it poorly. It was. Yeah. I mean, you have to imagine that the UFC knew about all these issues he was going through, and to cut him like that, it's... I would like to say it's surprising, but it's sad. But it's not surprising.
No, it's not. But when then you see a fighter like, and I don't know the full details, Ray Borg also fell out, and he's pulled out of many fight. Yeah. Week of fights, day of weigh-ins, and for all we know, he still has a job. But that is another story. I want both of these men to have their job. People on social media are saying, how come this guy gets to keep his job, but this guy can't keep his job? Regardless. But Casey, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, they handled this horribly. I mean, actually, they didn't even handle this. What did the UFC do other than just go, he couldn't fight, and then they just released him? Has the UFC even said anything publicly? So UFC, this is a bad situation. And, I mean, realistically, it's not that he didn't make weight. He was actually injured. He actually has a brain injury, a mental illness. Depression, and it should be treated that way. He had too much tiramisu, that's why we cut him. No, he's still suffering an injury from a loss a year ago. And this is important too. And I kind of say this over and over a lot with especially head trauma. In his loss to Wynn, he wasn't knocked out cold. He wasn't beaten up. It was just, if you remember the fight, it was a fight. And he lost the decision.
They fought in a phone booth for 15 minutes.
Yeah, but you watch those, because we see these big knockouts and we think, oh, that's the issue. That's the thing. It's actually these long fights, these 15-minute fights where they get hit a lot in the head. That's where you get the bad head trauma. That's why guys, you spar too much, because you don't get knocked out in sparring. You just get hit in the head a lot. So I wish the UFC treated this as an injury rather than a guy that just, you know, like I said, had too much dessert and couldn't make weight. So this isn't good. And maybe we don't know all the details, but the details we do know, not good.
Yeah, no. And we've seen fighters like TJ Grant and who was the Chris Holdsworth, who got concussions. They've never fought again. So I know Eric Spicely is a little bit of a renaissance man. He is low key. For any of you who don't know, he is a phenomenal skateboarder. You can go find all of his old hype videos. He also does professional wrestling. So
yes.
he has other avenues of income. But if he wants, he said he loves fighting. And if he is suffering from brain trauma. The UFC handled this poorly. And full disclosure, people in Rhode Island, where I'm from, are a little upset because he was one of the few fighters that represented our state. Actually, he's the only UFC fighter that represented our state. So we are now one less fighter down. And I know a lot of people in my state look up to him in the jiu-jitsu world as a mentor. So a little bit of a bummer all around in the situation.
Yeah.
Esther Lynn from the site, Cody actually has 2.3 million followers on Instagram. So my mistake, I was 1.3 million off on his Instagram following. So,
so close.
Wow, I undersold. I was like, yeah, he has like a million. That's a lot. Like a million, that was such an undersold his following by more than a million. That's unreal. That was unreal.
I want to go real quickly. I want to answer this real quickly. Then we'll go to a bunch of comments we got earlier. Hold on. Just because I haven't heard his name in a while.
Right. Will DuBronx get a title shot? And I'm not even going to try and pronounce this YouTube commenter's name. I apologize. So I don't think so. But Guillermo, what do you do with Charles DuBronx Oliveira next?
Right now, he's not getting a title shot. But one day, who knows? I really don't know what UFC has in plans for him. I came back from a short vacation yesterday. So I just sent texts to a ton of people. Trying to get updates, get some news. And I texted Charles Oliveira yesterday. He said that UFC was trying to give him a fight on Fight Islands last month. But someone that they offered the fight wasn't willing to take it. He wouldn't say who. So he's still waiting. He doesn't know where he's fighting. So who knows, man? I really don't know what the UFC is going to do with him. He's on a roll. I think he won 7 in a row now. Something so like he deserves
most submissions in UFC history. Yeah.
7 in a row to 7 finishes. It's insane. He deserves someone in the top, but is he getting? I don't know.
He deserves someone in the top 5.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The problem is the top 5 has so many people that are looking for so Khabib is going to fight Justin Gaethje. And then you got Conor, who's supposedly retired. Tony Ferguson wants to fight, and Dustin Poirier wants to fight. I think that's the top 5 right there.
And
I think Poirier and Ferguson should fight. Conor's retired. He's out of the equation. And the top 2 fighters are right there for a title shot. So I don't know who you match him up with. Paul Felder's supposedly retired, but they already fought, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah.
Fight again, whatever.
Yeah.
Who do you give him? Dan Hooker? Like Dan Hooker, that would be a fun fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think DuBronx is actually he's a low key UFC Hall of Famer. We just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
How old is he? He's like 20.
He's 25 or something.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like he's had almost I don't know how many fights, almost over like 15 fights in the UFC, and he's only like 25, 26. It's insane. He's in his prime.
He has the most submission wins in the history of the UFC, and I think he's like on the short list for most stoppage wins in general.
That's what I mean. This guy's a Hall of Famer. Like, it's just, yeah.
He's a Brazilian He's like the Brazilian Don Cerrone, you know.
Yeah.
He'll fight whoever. Like, yeah. He fought Jared Gordon, and then he fought in the
first round in São Paulo.
Yeah, he fights like Jim Miller in Milwaukee, and then he fights. He has a random rubber match with Nick Lentz, and then he fights Jared Gordon, and now he's like, all right, who do you want me to fight now? Like, I'm looking at the rankings right here. The top 5 is he's not getting anyone in the top 5. Dan Hooker is right above him. Felder's below him, retired. Diego Ferreira is sitting right there. Like, I'll watch him fight, I don't know, Makhachev, Gillespie, Dariush, Dober, like that's the rest of the rankings, right? Kevin Lee, like they already just fought. Like, I don't know. Felder seems good to me. I mean, not Felder. Hooker seems good to me.
When I spoke with his coach, I'd like to say 2 months ago, something like that, and I was trying to understand what they wanted next for him, and he mentioned that he wanted a main event. He wanted to headline a card after this big win of Kevin Lee, and but there wasn't a lot of options available for him. So he mentioned that he was interested in maybe Makhachev. So,
oh my God.
That was like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So I had no idea about that right now.
I want that fight. That's the fight I want. Yeah. I think that fight is all. I think because Makhachev has fought in good guys, but he hasn't fought the elite yet. And make that fight. I don't care about the hooker fight anymore. Makhachev versus Charles Oliveira is the fight I want.
He's just the most underrated. I think he's the most underrated, definitely most underrated as far as the fans, lightweight out there. But also, I want to blame the UFC a little bit on this. I mean, we work in MMA, and I've seen Charles Oliveira fight probably 15 times live, and yet I know zero about him. I honestly know, other than he wears glasses, that's all
do
I really
you think.
I don't
do
know anything think, about him. And I think that really hurts him as far as like a push to get him anything.
Do you think the fact that he doesn't speak English plays a factor?
The enemy's language? What are you talking about?
All right. I know the answer is yes, but I just wanted to hear you say it. Because if you can't connect with a fighter, you're like, you can appreciate him. Like you yourself said, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a low-key Hall of Famer. You just don't know anything about him because you can't connect with him. You can't communicate with him.
Yeah.
Which is not a problem, because if he doesn't want to learn English, he doesn't want to learn English. But I think that 100% that's the answer right there.
Like,
unless you're Jose Aldo, who just happens to be the greatest featherweight who ever lived and puts on spectacular performances. Like, if Charles Oliveira becomes champion, like Figueiredo, and then he keeps rattling off wins, then he'll be a big deal. But he has to get there first.
All right. Next question. Did we already answer this? I can go with this one.
From another one from Kiwi underscore MMA AZ, Mark on Twitter. With the recent losses for Macy Barber, Edmund Shabazian, Johnny Walker, and Hernandez, is it time we slow the roll up for up-and-coming prospects such as Hazmat, Jiri, and O'Malley, and let them build their way up slowly with less media? No, definitely not. I don't even think these guys were, like, all of these guys that got these, that are quote unquote getting shot up the rankings, are winning violently over really high level opponents. Like Macy Barber was undefeated, got a bunch of wins at flyweight, stoppage wins, which everyone talks about, like the women's don't get stopped, women divisions don't get stoppage. Macy Barber was getting stoppage wins. And she was like, hate her or love her. She was trying to be that villain that the flyweight division, quote unquote, needed. Everyone goes, oh, you need characters. We had Hurricane Helms on the show, and he was like, there's no characters in MMA anymore. No one wants to talk. Macy Barber and Roxanne Modafari, I've said this before, had more numbers outside of the main event between Conor McGregor and Cowboy. Those two dominated the YouTube numbers. So I think she deserved that fight. Derek Brunson himself said Edmund Shabazzian deserved that fight. Johnny Walker was coming off like three sub-minute knockouts before he lost
over tough dudes too. And
then Alexander Hernandez's first ever win in the UFC was first knockout over Beneil Dariush. So it's not like they don't deserve these fights.
Of all those names from the first part of this question, I think Alex Hernandez was the only one that got pushed too fast because Alex Hernandez was a late notice replacement. And honestly, I think if Dariush and Hernandez rematched, I would definitely pick Dariush. I just think Dariush just didn't know who was in front of him. And, you know, those things.
I would say the same thing about Johnny Walker, though. Because, I mean, if Johnny Walker runs it back with Serkinov, I think that's not going to be a first-round flying knee knockout again.
No.
Yeah, but I still think Johnny Walker is a very good fighter.
All of these guys are. Like, Hazmat, I think he's not fought in a legit welterweight yet at welterweight. Okay. I think I know what you're going to say, Case. We've talked about this a million times. I think Jiri Prochazka and O'Malley, I don't think Jiri Prochazka is even a prospect.
He's not a prospect.
He has like 30 something fights. I think if he wants to face anyone in the top five, he's got to put his hands up. Can't do that against can't fight like he fought against Volkan, against Dominic Reyes. O'Malley is getting built up and Hazmat doesn't have his next fight, but Guillermo, your thoughts?
I disagree. I agree exactly with what you said. 100%. They deserve that. They got the wins. It wasn't like they got in the UFC and their first fight was against the top five. No, they all had great wins until they lost. It's part of the game.
It happens.
Yeah.
I think people just I think they got into the UFC at a very young age, especially Macy and Edmund, and they both wanted to be the first youngest champion ever. And they looked spectacular. And then once you lose, they're not even 30 yet, and people are like, got to change camps. They're not good. And but that's just MMA.
Yeah.
Like when Anderson Silva lost to Chris Weidman, they were like, was Anderson Silva really a good fighter? I'm like, yeah, he's the greatest fighter ever. But MMA is a very like Felice, like we had this conversation with Felice about Felice Spencer. Like, oh, did we stunt the growth of Felice Spencer? Who did she lose to? Amanda Nunes and Chris Cyborg are her only losses. The greatest female fighters, the two greatest fighters in the history of women's MMA are her only losses. And you think we stunted her growth? I think Hazmat is the only one I am still have questions over. I think Jiri is legit and O'Malley is legit. I just want to see Hazmat Shemaev fight a actual welterweight. I don't have a problem with him fighting anyone in the top 15 whatsoever. I would like to see him fight a high level fighter though.
Yeah, all these talks about him fighting Usman already. Come on, man. Slow down. Come on.
Like, give him
he's a UFC fighter for 10 days. Calm down a little bit.
Yeah, like don't like if they want to give him 50, like if they want to match him against Donald Cerrone, it's gonna go one of two ways. We're either gonna get the Darren Till treatment or the Leon Edwards treatment, or we're gonna get the Alexander Hernandez treatment. And Donald Cerrone has been in that position where you give him Leon Edwards or Darren Till. Darren Till sparked him. Leon Edwards cooked him up for 25 minutes. And then he just beat the soul out of Alexander Hernandez in Brooklyn. So we're going to get one of those two. I like the Cerrone fight. If that fight does happen, I know Cerrone will fight anyone. But I would like to see Hazmat fight an actual welterweight in the top 15 before I throw my name in the hat for his contendership.
All right.
Sarah Kaufman. What is the best flavor of Otter Pop? So former A-side co-host Sarah Kaufman, I believe this is directed at E. Casey Lydon. What is the best flavor of Otter Pop?
Let me see. Well, okay, for a reminder.
And why is it blue?
So here we go. On the screen here, we have all the flavors.
Oh, Guillermo, do you know what Otter Pop
is? I have no idea what that is.
did you see that? Did you see the advertisement? What, you were in Abu Dhabi. You didn't have an Otter Pop?
Yeah, no, I saw. No. I saw that on the cage, but I had no idea what that is.
So they are a frozen popsicle that comes in packs of a million. So you have to buy a minimum of a million in a box. If you can get through the plastic wrapping without cutting your mouth open, you're going to have a delicious time ahead of you. I think the blue flavor is the best, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Louis Blue Raspberry, without a doubt, is the best. You got to go with Louis Blue.
Casey, some people are only listening to this. Tell them what's on the screen.
So I'm going to go through all the flavors for our podcast listeners. We have God. Sir Isaac Lime, Strawberry Short Kook, Louis Blue Raspberry, Little Orphan Orange, Georgia O'Peach, Horatio Pineapple, Alexander the Grape. Get it?
That's okay.
Great name.
There's a chocolate one?
Whoa, disgusting. Carl Gustav Fudge. Okay, there's a fudge. Okay, I don't know. No, that's not fudge.
Willy Watermelon. Cherry Guevara. That one is hilarious. That one is so funny. And then Tangerine Otter. The blue
is that more of a popsicle or more of an ice cream?
It's a popsicle.
They're all popsicles. I'm not sure how you have fudge popsicles, but
that's see. Anyway, the answer is blue.
Yeah,
and I will not take any slander against Louis Blue Raspberry.
Gui, what are you picking?
I have no idea.
Come on, man.
He's on. I would go with Alexander the Grape because that's a great name.
It's a great name. All right, Sarah Kaufman, I hope I answered your question. What a weirdo question. Jeez. we get the weirdest fans. Jeez, go home, loser. We love Sarah Kaufman.
From 916 Sam Harris on Twitter, what do you think will happen to the winner of Lewis Olenek, and who do you think will win the fight? Guillerme, where there's a big fight between Derek Lewis and Alexei Olenek, heavyweight tilt main event now this upcoming Saturday. Who wins, and where do they go from there?
I think I'm going with Olenek in this fight.
Really?
Yeah. Against Verdum, I watching live. I haven't rewatched it. That fight, I think Verdum won, but it was close. It was. I'm fine with Olenek winning, but it's five rounds, and I'm not sure how Derek Lewis is gonna do it in five rounds. If he goes five rounds, you know. That's one of the fights. If Derek Lewis catches him early, it's over. Like he had in the, I think it was a Curtis Blades fight. And he just got knocked out in seconds. But yeah.
You have no faith in exhausted 24 minutes into a fight, Derek Lewis power?
Yeah.
You know, I don't care who wins this. I just hope it goes five rounds. I hope it goes at least four rounds. And I hope all the real action doesn't start till they're completely gassed in the fifth round in that little tiny baby crib of a cage, which they're going to look like just two little kids in a small cage just going at it, exhausted. I just can't wait.
Derek Lewis has made it out of three rounds twice. He's 1-1. Like he got sparked by was it Mark Hunt, and then who did he beat?
He was very injured in that fight,
that back injury, and then he beat Shamil, and I can't remember how to pronounce his last name. He beat him in the fourth round in Albany. So he's gone through five. He's gone in four rounds, four, and he's 1-1. Can he make it 2-1? You don't know. But I'm picking Derek Lewis, and I want him to fight Curtis Blaydes after that.
All right. So Gui, you think Olenek is gonna get the submission, or is he gonna just kind of, I don't know, go decision? You think
it's a small cage, right?
Yep, it is a small cage.
Yeah, but I think it's being in a small cage, it favors him to get fight to the fight to the ground. No,
I agree.
Getting against the cage, they'll take him down, and five rounds is a lot of time. He's on the ground, so
you start every round standing up, bro.
Alexei Olenek, I think, came in at like 225 pounds against Verdum. And Derek Lewis like cuts down. Like he might have a 40-pound difference in there.
That's a solid. That's a healthy 40 pounds. Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah,
dude.
That's like kicking a bag of soup over and over and over. So.
And as far as what's next for him, I think if Olenek wins, I would match him up against Sakai if he beats Overeem.
Yeah. I like those two. I like all those matchups.
Yeah, I think the winner of Sakai Overeem, that makes sense. Yeah, I like it.
Well, because he already lost Overeem, right?
I think so, yeah.
He did?
Or they matched up or something.
If Sakai wins, I would do that five. Because that would... Yeah. Or maybe the Overeem rematch, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
From
a lot of, Bobby... Not a lot of options in the division right now.
From at Bobby Atkins on Twitter. Sorry for your loss, Jose. Thank you. Lost my grandmother in May. Thank you for the continued content during the pandemic. Quick question. Does Michael Chandler join the UFC regardless of outcome on Friday? Well, first of all, thank you for the condolences. Yes, my grandfather passed away. Shout out to my mom who lost her brother and her father in the span of 1 month. That is just absolutely brutal. So thank you for the kind words. But to answer the question, does Chandler join the UFC regardless of the outcome on Friday? Set the scene. He is rematching Benson Henderson. Noted comic book fan, even though his favorite comic book character is Shatterstar, which is just a terrible answer. And then his second favorite is Cable, which is a worst answer. But regardless of that, Guilherme, will Michael Chandler join the UFC regardless of what happens on Friday?
I think if he wins, there's a good chance he joins the UFC. I'd say it's highly likely. But if he loses, depends on how much the UFC is willing to offer him and how much he's willing to get a pay cut to leave Bellator to UFC, if assuming he gets a cut in pay coming off a loss. So it depends on what he's up to if he loses, you know. If he wins, I think the UFC is gonna grab him. But it's down to money. I think if he loses,
who would you want to? If he does jump to the UFC, who do you think is a good fight for him right away? Because Michael Chandler is not going to fight someone outside. I think he's a top 10 lightweight right out of the gate. Yeah. So like, if we're looking for a fight for Charles Oliveira, why not Michael Chandler?
I was gonna say that. Yeah.
Why not let? Or you could have Donald Cerrone drop down and give him the Eddie Alvarez treatment, where Eddie Alvarez's UFC debut is against Donald Cerrone. Dana Hooker's obviously there. Maybe Felder wants to come out of time and main event against Chandler, like. Michael Chandler versus anybody in the top 15, I'm 100% in. But Charles Oliveira wants a fight. Donald Cerrone supposedly has a fight lined up already, so he might be out of the picture. But I like Cerrone or Oliveira right out of the gate.
Yeah.
All those sound great.
Maybe Dan Hooker, but I think, those options are better.
Any of those guys. I mean, he's an amazing fighter. And I really want. And if he does stay in Bellator, there's still a lot of great fights. I would love to see him rematch Pitbull. either one of those guys. So there's still great fights for him at Bellator, but there's just new, fresher fights I'd rather see him fight in the UFC. But whatever he does, I'll still watch him fight.
Yeah. I am a big fan of Michael Chandler. So I think a lot of it depends on not if he wins, but how he wins too. If he just smokes Ben Henderson, then maybe is this his last fight under his contract? Is this?
I think so.
Yeah. So I think if he smokes Ben Henderson, then I think it's who's going to pay more, Bellator to re-sign him and to fight rematch Pitbull for the title, or UFC. It's just
he's not, because Pitbull's a lot tied up in the featherweight Grand Prix.
So he's not going to be defending the
No. According to when we were at Bellator's media day, Ed Soares told me that he's not going to defend the lightweight until he's done with the Grand Prix.
I kind of wonder if the pandemic changed anything, but we'll see.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a good. It is a good point.
That was pre-pandemic.
So fights are good. But he has to get through Pedro Carvalho first, if you haven't, go read Guillerme's piece where they interviewed each other. I love when Guillerme does that. So Pitbull interviewed Pedro Carvalho and vice versa. So go read that anyway. Plug.
All right, let's next question.
I know we ran over a little. We're running over a little time, but we can't.
We'll fly through these.
This is his debut.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a special day.
From at it Isaiah T Chiaki on Twitter. Why can't you fight high, Casey? I'm sure you heard Tim Elliott got popped again, or popped for marijuana. So that's Casey's answer, is boo. Guillerme, why can't we fight high?
I echo that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we should be able to fight high, but you shouldn't be suspending and banning people from marijuana.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care.
Sure. Don't be baked out of your mind when you're walking to the octagon. Like, have some clarity, because you're about to get in a fist fight. But I still think you shouldn't be suspended. I think we're all in agreement. Stop testing for weed out of competition and stuff.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, as long as you can pass a basic sobriety test, because I'm pretty sure you can fight drunk. Like, it's like, that's technically, that's not against the rules too, but like, for some reason, if you had a couple of weed gummies last week and you're going to fight this Saturday, that's just stupid. So
there should be a level of being able to, in competition.
So that's just dumb. Unless they saw Tim Elliott just chowing down Otter Pops backstage, you're like, oh, that guy's stoned.
Chowing down on the fudge ones. Oh, this guy has to.
Who eats the fudge Otter Pops?
From Derek Lombardo on Twitter, one of my former fry cook linemen at McCoy Stadium out in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Jose, big fan. No, you're not. When Trevor Bauer struck out Grayson Griner over the weekend, he taunted the batter with a McGregor strut. What's another fighter's signature celebration you'd like to see replicated in another sport as a time? Well, Trevor Bauer is another level of human being. I'm sure neither of you guys know who he is. That guy is a lunatic.
No idea.
He's a baseball player who's a crazy man. He likes to, he got taken out of a game, and instead of handing the ball to his coach, he threw the ball over the outfield. He threw the ball like 400 yards in a fit of rage. Not 400 yards, like 400 feet. That would be insane if he threw 400 yards. He did the strut. What's another fighter's signature celebration you'd like to see replicated in other sports as a taunt? Guy, I'll start with you. Oh, he's thinking. Casey?
I will have a classic one. Cheese or cheese.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the one everyone.
Can you replicate it from your seat right there?
No, I can't.
That's funny, Casey.
I always love the Josh Barnett. You know, the throat slash. I can't think of too many. How many ones are there?
There's a few that I think would be hilarious. Like if a pitcher struck out a batter and then did a backflip off the dugout, like Justin Gaethje, I think that would be
for every strikeout.
Yeah. Or like if someone gets a touchdown and while they're running, they do the John Dotson backflip off
the goalpost.
I think that would be a lot of fun.
Who should do the Mighty Mouse celebration? I came in. You know,
Jose Altuve, probably.
Yeah, that would be cute.
He's tiny when he's not hit listening to trash cans getting punched.
Hey, what? Too soon.
No, it's not. It's a new baseball season. They did it. Hey, Casey, did they get in trouble? No, they're fair game.
Champs.
Their punishment was. Casey, tell me what their punishment was.
They get lots of mean tweets now.
Oh, okay. You still get paid, though?
Made millions.
And then none of them got. Wait, you're mean to tell me they still get paid and no one got suspended?
But their social medias, man, that's priceless.
Yeah, I mean, you have no idea what we're talking about, do you?
No idea.
Yeah. So a baseball team cheated and won a championship and they didn't get in trouble. End of story. Casey also happens to like
the statistics show that it made no difference. So
next time you interview Derek Lewis, you should ask him about it. He gets real heated when you bring it up.
Sorry, let's talk about the Rockets.
They're unbelievable. James Harden, shout out to the former Sun Devil. So I want to see the Justin Gaethje taunt, the Dodson taunt, the Mighty Mouse taunt. It's not a lot. That's not a whole lot. There's like, I don't know. There's not a whole lot of signature ones anymore.
Yeah, man. I feel like that. Yeah. That's too bad.
Rampage Howl.
Yeah.
The Chocolate All Ice Man. I mean, I guess Glover Teixeira still kind of does that. Oh, no. What about if someone. So, like, when I dunked on AK Lee, like, when that. Actually, that happened in real life. When Sam Rockwell alley-ooped to me and I dunked on AK Lee, I did the no time because I had no time for AK, like Vulcan Ozdemir. So I think that's a really good one because that happened in real life. Don't forget it.
We can't do this in pandemic era, but I like someone do the Jose Auto. As soon as someone hits a home run, they run around the bases, but then they go right into the crowd too.
That happens in soccer sometimes. In Brazil,
really?
They actually go into the crowd, not just like at the barrier. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Good on them. Oh, we got Esther Lynn.
Best go ahead, point and dance. Yeah, 100%. I think everyone should do that with everything. Get a single, just point and dance in baseball.
Go for it.
Hit a free throw, just start dancing. I love it. 10 out of 10.
Real quick question for you guys: who's your favorite? Let me see. Put this politely. Not great fighter, but man, you just love watching them fight. Mitch Gohea is my. She's not the greatest fighter, but man, I'm just the biggest fan of who she is because I just don't get
it. It's always fun.
Yeah, it's always fun. Do you have one of those fighters, Gui? Like, it doesn't matter if they win or lose. You just love the. I don't know, just everything about them.
Yeah, off the top of my head, it's hard to think about it. But yeah, Mitch Gohea is definitely a good option. Yeah.
I'd have to agree with that.
Okay, we're out of hours. Oh, man, look at these. We're
out of hours. Ben Rothwell dance. No, Ben Rothwell laugh.
His laugh and dance.
Oh, I remember he knocked it over him in Connecticut, and then he danced around in that tiny octagon.
Okay, we are.
Shevchenko's victory dance. Oh, I don't think anyone can pull that off, honestly. Nah. That's just like another level of...
Nah, when Harden drops a three, you know, he just... Does this?
Right. Yeah, but see, because he'll have time to do it because every three he hits, he falls over and he gets another shot. Insider basketball, Rockets all day. See, now you're just pulling up Houston things.
Hey, I control that. I control what goes on the screen.
The Rockets are great. They still got to win.
Yeah.
Westbrook is cool. You know that I think they have the smallest starting five. I think their tallest player is like 6'7", which I think is hilarious. They're still great, though. Is that it? You got any more questions?
It's just about the Astros and Rockets now.
Okay. Are they saying, like, why are the Rockets
why they're so awesome. Casey, guy, you're handsome. I like that Gui guy. Nice hair, Jose. Yeah, that's all the comments are right now.
Well, two of those things are accurate. The other ones are not. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Guillermo, you are the guest of honor. Congratulations on 7 years. And MMA fighting. I hope we get 700 more. So, but the floor is yours to plug, talk, say whatever you want, my man.
I don't have a promo. I just like to thank this fantastic team for having me for 7 years. Hope to stay here for more 700 years. I'm not a crystal guy, but my wife is. So I brought all the her crystals to show
you. Is there any pyrite in there?
I have no idea the names, what this is. I have no idea what this is, but that's a lot of crystals here.
So she's on Team Crystal. Added to the list.
Yeah, she is. Official,
not an unofficial member. She is an official Team Crystal. Jessica, if you're watching, see if you can ID those and tell us what they do.
Yeah.
And then we can get back to you. Guillermo needs to know.
A lot of callers.
Yeah.
Oh, Crystal Jessica is on a bad streak. Did you see how her picks went for
NASCAR? Did not do great. Anyway. She also says that she wants to nominate Brian Kelleher or Jairzinho as the new official Captain Crystals, given the light of certain things that have come out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. But, Casey, what do you got to say?
No, thanks for watching, everybody, and be safe and have a great rest of the weekend. Enjoy the slugfest of heavyweights this Saturday, right. Well, and also the Bellator card kind of rules. So we have Friday and Saturday fights. So yeah.
And before that,
and Rising.
Oh yeah, Rising. Thank you.
Yeah.
And before all that, we got the Contender Series tonight. I'll be on the scene. You can watch all of our post-fight scrums. I know we're one fight down, so I think there's four fights or something like that. There's four or five total fights. So I'm sure Dana White will talk and all that. So stick around for that. I'm driving back to Arizona tomorrow. I won't be at Vegas next week. So I'll be back in normal time on the A-Side live chat. I think we're going to have Alex Savage back next weekend. Cool Alex, as we like to call it.
Alex.
We had a few people tweet us saying, oh, when's Cool Alex going to come back? Like, I'm not making that up. I'm not saying, they're actually saying, when is, quote, yeah, Cool Alex coming back? So sorry, AK Lee. I dunked on you so hard, you no longer are cool. Anyway, we'll be back next Wednesday. Find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, all that. Gee will 100% be back in the future. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.